Hey guys, this is the Walking Well podcast. Thank you for tuning in. It's season four. And, you know, we've been on a ride and it's, in my opinion, been a really good ride. We've been talking about sexuality and just all of its facets, from what it ought to be to what it shouldn't be. And I'm really excited about today's guest. She is no stranger to the Walking Well podcast. She was actually on episode 14 of season two, Pursuing Your Passion. And so we have Dr. Kyla Nicole Lurie here. And I'm super excited. So today's topic, trigger warning for everyone. This whole segment has been trigger warning, but we are talking about sexual assault. And if you know anything about me and anything about the podcast, you know I have a heart for truth and just delivering that with transparency and authenticity so that people can get free. And so I high key believe that is what Dr. Lurie will be delivering for us today. So she's been on the podcast, so she doesn't necessarily have to introduce herself. But what's new? What's happening? Where are you now in life?
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much for having me, and hello to everyone that's listening. Thank you so much for tuning in. It is such a delight and a pleasure to be on back, and I'm honored to be back. You know, sometimes I really don't get invited back to places. So I'm like, wow, hey, I'm doing something. I'm definitely still trauma coaching. I've actually scaled down a little bit because my trauma clients, I just have dived into curriculums and programs, and so they take a little bit more time now. I'm also, since then, have launched a publishing company, a podcast of my own, Pause and Press Play. My goodness, I've just been out here working. Actually, my newest venture is my video series, Unorthodox, which folks can tune into on Tuesdays at 7. And so I have my hands full. I think I also, since then, I have a toddler now. So that's a whole different ball game. And so I've been busy.
Yeah,
I've been busy. But God's good. It's been faithful. I'm really excited about tonight because, you know, trauma is something where I started, something I'm very passionate about. But there are so many truths, like you say, that come with it. So I'm excited to jump into it.
Yes, we are so excited for you to jump into. Okay, I'm so excited. All right, so then maybe let's start first things first. So could you talk a little bit about your personal experience with...
Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh man, it's interesting because what a lot of folks don't know, it's I had childhood, you know, abuse. And so it really shaped my ideology of sex and boys and men. It actually did the reverse for me. You know, I was very, I wasn't promiscuous in the sense of people to people, person to person, but I was very much so interested in it because of how I was introduced to it. And so, you know, I dated older all the time. You know, I pursued the bad boys. I really, sex didn't really have meaning or value or intimacy to me because I had lost that part of me. But, you know, I grew up a Jesus person. I think we all go through our moments where we're like, oh, forget Jesus. So I went through that in my teenage years for sure. And then when I got like super duper, you know, as we say, for real saved and for ourselves and not our parents saved, God had restored that part of me in my life and the intimacy and understanding the value of your body and who you are. And there was a lot of things I had to work through. And so, you know, there's that aspect of it. But then experiencing it as a child and healing and growing and having that is vastly different than, you know, someone that experiences later in life. And unfortunately, I caught both ends of it, you know. So, you know, imagine coming out of it, being delivered from it, being fine, only to, you know, 2012, being 25, and boom, you know, you're sexually assaulted 2 days before Thanksgiving, you know, in a parking lot, coming, you know, out of a grocery store. You know, and it was traumatic for me in the sense of, the things that go through your mind, you know, it's amazing. Our body really does a fight and flight. You know, you have two things, but something from my experience that I've come to appreciate or understand is not necessarily blaming myself for the things that you think or, you know, what happens. For me, I played over and over in my mind, you know, am I going to die like this? You know, is this going to be the last time? Like, what is this person going to do to me? You know, how are my parents going to be notified of me? Like, those are real things that happen to you. I'm in the process. And, you know, when you're in and out of a daze and you're being physically abused and sexually abused at the same time, it's a rather different experience. And this honestly was coming around the time of law school and starting and all of those things. And I actually contemplated not filing for a long time. You know, my assault happened at like 9:30, and I ended up, you know, it was almost like the guy did what he did and kind of threw me away. You know, I got up and ran to my vehicle. I don't even know how long it was, but I remember looking at the clock, the things you remember, you know, I remember getting in the car. I remember looking at the clock. I remember moving my mirror up because I didn't see my face. I didn't look at myself at all. I went to my friend's house and, you know, I knocked on the door, and before she could open the whole door, you know, I asked her to crack the door, like, you know, first, and, you know, I'm so goofy. You know, my personality is crazy. For people who know me, they're like, oh my gosh, she's just, you know, laughing. So she's laughing, joking. I'm like, seriously, you know, I'm asking her, where are your kids? You know, where are your kids at? And she's like, they're in the living room. And I was like, hey, you know, tell them to go in the room. So all these things that you're conscious of, you know, in your mind that's happening. She's like, stop joking. Come in here. It's raining, you know. And I'm like, where, you know, send the kids in the room. And tell them don't come out, you know, because I hadn't seen what I looked like. You know, I felt the throbbing, I felt the red, I felt all of these body things that I knew things were wrong and out of whack, but I didn't know how, you know, what it was. And, you know, I'm pretty light skinned, so it didn't take much. and I immediately, you know, once she did it, she came back and she opened the door and she looked at me. I could tell from her face that she was like, devastated, you know. And I go in the room and I'm sitting on the bed and she's just like, what the hell happened? You know, excuse my French. And I'm just sitting there like, you know, how did I get here? You know, and after a silence for a little while, you know, the only thing that kept me from not going to the hospital was I could not remember. I said, man, you know, was there enough time for this person to use protection? And I was like, I can't live with contracting something, anything, whether that's a, you know, a disease or a pregnancy or anything. I was like, I can't imagine that. So I have to go to the hospital. And that was a whole nother experience, you know. There's so many things that is wrong with the system, but so many things that we don't think about. You know, I get to the hospital and took me to like a clinic first before they transported me. And, you know, they had all male staff. They sent the male police officer, you know. They wouldn't do the rape kit unless I called the police. There was just so many different things. And, you know, so I ended up not even having my rape kit done until like 4 a.m. You know, I got there at like 11 something. It was just insane. You know, you having to leave the place and then be transported. And I mean, it was just so much. And I literally didn't get home. I actually got back to my friend's house at like 6:30 that morning. And by this time, you know, your phone is ringing off the hook. People are, you know, finding out. People have been notified, you know, the police. I mean, just so much. And, you know, that was my experience. And I actually flew home to be with my parents for a little while afterwards, you know, because I just needed to get it together. And then having your children look at you, you know, and they can look at you and tell like, hey, man, what happened? You know, and, you know, you're saying, oh, I was just in an accident, you know, and you sleep for days and you have all these emotions and all these thoughts. So I always tell people, you know, when I say I've been there, you know, but that's a whole different process than overcoming and healing from childhood sexual abuse. It's a whole nother healing journey that you have to go on when you're talking about being assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting, you know, it's interesting. And I've grown so much, obviously, since 2012. But, you know, I still have moments for sure. You know, the triggers are few and far between, but they're still there, you know. And then having a spouse and, you know, you have there's so many things
so much
to
process through.
Yeah, that you process. And, you know, it's like we talk about life being like an onion, but mm-hmm. sexual assault is like an onion. You know, it's layer by layer. Once you think you've got this layer, you've got to conquer another layer. Once you think that, you know, this isn't growing, you realize, oh, that end is growing. You know, so I always encourage people to therapy, talking about it, you know, having your resources, journaling about it. Those things are very, very important. Finding you somebody that specializes in that to walk you through those stages because you're going to have them. You know, you're going to have them for sure.
So can you, because you mentioned kind of like that assault is like an onion and that there are these layers and that your process of healing is like an onion as well. It has layers and phases and seasons and moments, I imagine, throughout the lifespan. So what were some of those things that you did to heal, but to kind of also like reclaim your life?
Oh, yeah. So for me, I am a confronter by nature.
Mm.
So anything that tends to put me in a shell or clam me up makes me go harder, you know, because I'm like, oh, I'm just not going to allow this can't be the thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so after about a week, you know, I went home to like the country, like Louisville, Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
I locked in, I slept, but you know, it was a physical thing that I had to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I had to start immediately redirecting my energy because I felt like my life was shutting down. You know, mm-hmm. I felt like, oh, I don't want to move. I don't want to think. I don't want to process. I don't want to this, you know, how do I tell the person that I love this happened to me? You know, I avoided at the time your boyfriend, your significant other, your courting partner, whatever the term is. You know, I avoided him for like weeks. Like I literally dropped off the planet. You know, I didn't return calls or text, and I was like, I just have to kind of get my head in the game. And so after about a couple of weeks, I, you know, figured out, okay, this is what I'm going to do. But during that time, I made a list. I made a list of everything that was happening, you know, on the emotional side. I figured, okay, I have to overcome the sadness. I have to accept this is what happened. I have to accept, you know, that I was in the situation, but I am not the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not the problem. They're the problem. You know, I had to go through that. And then on the other side of that, I had to go through everything that I felt. You know, I had to literally make a list of shame and guilt and what did I do and how did I contribute? Did I contribute? You know, and then after I got done with that list, I had to figure out, okay, now what do I have to do to make it happen? I clearly am going to need therapy. You know, I need to talk to my immediate circle. I need to establish what am I going to do about fear and paranoia. And so I had like three or four different lists.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I started journaling about them and compiling them. I immediately scheduled therapy to figure out what to do and my resources, and I actually doubled up because the state provides you with resources that are free. Then my job provided me with resources that was free. You know, so I really had like three sessions happening, you know, every week. You know, I was going through my EAP. I was getting the resources from the state. You know, then I was dealing with my personal coaching, you know, that I had. So I had a lot of support. You know, I would say that for anybody, you know, even if you're not in a situation where you can afford it, it's like you have to find the support and you have to establish it rather quickly, because the longer you sit in it, the more you isolate and the more you feel in it. You know, I had my gynecologist, you know, cell phone number. And I would have moments where I would call her and just, I feel disgusting, you know, or my body is doing this and I don't know what this means. You know, like you have to have whatever those areas are that you're concerned about that you have to find those resources for someone to walk you through it because you're going to feel it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if my body is doing this and it didn't used to do that, is that me? Is that stress? Is that the medication? Because then there's a whole physical thing, you know, that you go through when you, you know, you have a rape kit, they give you almost every drug that they've ever made,
wow.
You know, and it destroys your pH balance and your floor, you know, it kills everything. And, you know, we think, oh, great. But that also does something, you mm-hmm. know, when, you know, you're killing everything. So the bacteria has to grow back. The yeast has to grow back. The, you know, all of that stuff. And I know if there are guys listening out there, I'm sorry.
They'll be all right.
You know, and so you have all of these different things happening to you at any given time. And so that was how I started to establish like myself. And then I had to accept my new norm. Mm. And I think this is one of the things that we struggle with in particular. I made a decision that I'm not going to be a victim. Mm-hmm. I was victimized. Mm-hmm. And I immediately had that mindset. And so I did not allow my family to talk to me about it for 3 days. I had two requests of them. I said, I need to talk about it when I'm ready. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about it with you guys have 2 hours. You've got 2 hours to ask me whatever you want to ask me. You know, you got 2 hours to be mad, sad, angry, indifferent, all of that. And then at the end of that, we are not going to talk about it in a present tense anymore. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a past tense thing. And that was very difficult, you know, for my family because it forced them to deal with it. I said, but you guys don't get to process it on your time and my time. You get to talk to me about it and we can talk about it together. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to start my healing journey. So while I'm starting my healing journey, then you guys have to process it separately, mm-hmm. you know, after this moment, because I can't carry your pain and mine. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I recognized pretty quickly where my strengths and my weaknesses were. And I said, I'm not strong enough yet to look at you and watch you cry because I want to console you. And that will force me to not deal with
my stuff.
What I have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Like I cannot afford to deal with this 2 years down the road, you know. And so I was really honest with that. And I think that's just something that. It may come with age, it may come with wisdom, it may come with you absolutely knowing yourself. Mm-hmm. But these are, I think, are big things that people do when they go through these situations because they tend to want to be the strong one and they tend to want to fix it and they tend to want to carry it. And it really forces you into an isolation faster. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't willing to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I had already been through a whole lot, mm-hmm. You know, because at that time it was like 2 months after my divorce. Mm-hmm. So I was already dealing, mm-hmm. you know, with stuff. And then it was just like, what? You know, I was like, OK, this is crazy. So I had some really tough conversations, you know, and that's how I began to kind of inch my way back. And I'll never forget something so powerful. My pastors, you know, when I finally gotten back in, you know, they saw me and came to see me. But one thing that they said to me that stuck with me, and he says, you know, we are where you are. If you're up, we're up. If you're down, we're down. And he made it so simple. And he said, all you got to do is say, I'm up, I'm down. And that allowed me permission to set the tone for how I could feel on any given day. Mm-hmm. I was allowed to give myself permission to say today is a bad day, you know, and not feel bad for saying today is a really bad day, you know. Mm-hmm. But it stuck with me, you know, and I carried it. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the thing that kept me from being in bondage to my emotions.
Wow. That's really good. You said a lot.
I know. I was just like,
really good.
On and on and on.
No, like, but just like,
you may have to replay this 100 times,
right?
To catch it all.
Right. Even just the last little bit of if you're up, we're up. Because I do think sometimes, especially when you mentioned the thing about being strong, I think we do this, especially as women, mm-hmm. where we want to be the strong one and push past it and take care of everybody around us. Mm-hmm. But so many times that kind of pace, that kind of approach, usually your stuff gets left undealt with and it's still seeping into your soul.
Mm-hmm. It's how we're built. Mm-hmm. You know, we are built to be these strong, amazing, talented women. We're nurturers. Mm-hmm. We are, this is how we are. And we want to be the saver. You mm-hmm. know, we want to be that, let me take your pain away. And it happens, like you said, it happens in so many situations. You know, moms, wives, employees, we are, okay, I can do that. I can fix that. And I just knew that there are certain things that when they happen in life, mm-hmm. you have to pause. Mm-hmm. My motto for my entire brand, Purposely Living Out Loud, I am not my circumstances. I don't have to be what society says I have to be. So I've always been a rebel in that sense. Like, don't tell me mm-hmm. how to feel, mm-hmm. you know, don't tell me what to say. Don't mm-hmm. tell me this. I have enough intellect to know what to do and what not to do, what's appropriate, what's not inappropriate, but don't take away, mm-hmm. Don't take away me. And so there are things that happen in our world that society says you don't get to be, you don't get to do. Mm-hmm. And I refused it. You know, I just refused it. And I said, hey, I'm not a victim. I am a survivor. But mm-hmm. just because I'm a survivor does not mean that I don't have victim feelings. Mm-hmm. Because it's a mindset. I have survived this instance to tell you about it and to talk about it. However, it takes a second for my emotions and my mind to catch up with how I'm walking out my life in this area. And so I have victim feelings, respect them, mm-hmm. but I am not a victim, mm-hmm. you know, so it's a boundary line. It's a boundary line.
That's super powerful. I think you segued from, you know, when if I'm up, they're up to not being in bondage to your feelings, to giving your feelings space, but also mm-hmm. not the authority to define you.
Right.
So I have kind of two questions and I can't figure out which one to ask first, but we'll start with, since we're talking feelings, shame. Shame is mm-hmm. such a monster when it comes to sexual assault. Mm-hmm. How did you go about like pulling the claws of shame out of you?
Oh, yeah, because that was a thing for sure. I struggled with shame because I felt like guilt and shame, I think they combined for me because in my mind, I played it differently. You know, I thought, if I'm in this situation, I'm going to do this, you know, as we often do. But then I had to deal with, what were you doing, you know, stopping in this parking lot late? Why would you, you know, go to this place and it's not necessarily lit? Or why would you reach over into your truck to get your wallet, you know, that you left in and leave the door open? Why didn't you get in? Why, you know, so you're thinking about these things like, And it engulfs you because mm-hmm. it goes against what you believe is logical. Mm-hmm. You know, you start taking away your rights instead of saying, hey, I'm a human, I'm a person, and nobody has the right to violate me.
Right.
You begin to question yourself. Like, hey, you know, you're out here, you've got on, you know, these black tights and, you know, this skimpy shirt, or, you know, I was just running to the store, so I had on something that I'm lounging around in. And instead of actually dealing with, hey, this was a creep, mm-hmm. you know, this was someone that was loathly in themselves, mm-hmm. you do this. So for a little while, I was very like, you're stupid. But then I had to start replacing every negative thought with something positive. You know, I had one line, and that line I repeated to myself over and over is, if I said, well, you know, you shouldn't have been out that late anyway by yourself on the main road doing this, I would say, that doesn't give anybody the right to violate me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, well, you know, you probably should have actually put on your jeans and your bodysuit underneath. You know better. You always do that. You know, you never go out in your sports bra and, you know, your Spanx tights. And then I would say, nobody has the right to violate me. Oh, well, you know, you shouldn't have been bending over like that, because clearly somebody thought, hey, butt in the air, let me go ahead and do whatever. Nobody has the right to violate me. Like, I kept saying that. And once I became comfortable in that, and I believed that, that started to dismantle my shame. You know, and it was the same way with guilt. Like, you know, you always talk to your mom when you're out until you're doing this, and you told her to go home, you know, or you told her not to, you would be fine. Say, hey, that's not my fault that somebody else decided to, you know, do this. And I had to tackle it from a, you know, Bible aspect of, hey, you know, we live in a fallen world with fallen people. You know, nothing you did warranted this type of behavior. And that's how I would, you know, dismantle it. Every time I had the thoughts, because they would come from all different angles. And I would say, nope, doesn't matter. Stop. No is no. Nope, that's not what you're going to do. Excuse me. And that's kind of how I plowed through it.
So my second question, because this, I mean, like, I've known women that have been assaulted. I have my own interesting history of stuff. So how did you reconcile? You mentioned, like, fallen world, fallen people. But as, like, a person of faith and that happening to you, how did your, like, walk with the Lord, your faith journey, all of that, how did all of that just what did that even look like?
Interesting. So, oddly enough, that was really interesting. The most interesting part about it is I don't think I blamed God. I don't think I ever, like, I was too, like, you know, I fear the Lord type to be like, oh God, this is your fault. But I definitely was like, Lord, where was my discernment? You know, where was my, oh, this place feels eerie, or, oh, this is creepy. Like, where was that second wave? And it took me a little while. And I think the biggest thing that helped me was that I was completely transparent with God about my feelings. Like, I was not going to God, thou art thou, you know, you've forsaken me. I was, you know, angry. I was saying to God, like, oh, I'm upset that this happened. Like, I'm angry that we have these people around, you know, or I'm angry that I'm hurting, or like, I was very, very transparent with God, but I also asked him to help me process through it in the natural. I said, because my spirit is impacted, but it was very clear to me that it was impacted. Like, oh, I had gotten God down in such a simplistic way that anything that's good is from God, anything that's bad is from the enemy. So I knew, oh, this is bad. This isn't God. This was not God's intention. This was not his nature. This is not the future that he has for me or created for me. Oh, this is the enemy. So it was very easy for me to direct my feelings, because I knew that they were bad feelings, and I knew the nature of God was not inherently anything bad. So therefore, I didn't have a reason to say, like, oh, this is your fault. Rather, hey, man, I was supposed to, you know, avoid that fiery dart, and I caught it. So, you know, we said, hey, no weapon formed against me shall prosper, but I feel like it did. But even in that, I was able to say, oh, it didn't, because I'm alive.
Mm-hmm.
Because it could have gone so many different ways. Oh, I'm alive. I can talk about it. I can tell it. So how are you going to turn that pain into purpose? How are you going to turn this negative instance into somebody else's breakthrough? Like, what are you going to do with that? I'm here because I have something to give for that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I was able to navigate through it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that, I love that you said you had drilled down God to this simplistic understanding where there wasn't really this moment of like, you did this to me, you let this happen. Because I think a lot of times that's kind of the like, you didn't stop it, you know, even if you mm-hmm. didn't, even if you didn't do it, you didn't stop it and you could have. Right. But to understand like that was a fiery dart and we do live in a fallen world and the promise still stands that it does not, it can form, but it's not going to prosper. Like it didn't destroy you and you have the ability to go in and talk about it and share, and bring healing. So what were some of the, like the things that surprised you about being a survivor?
There were surprising moments where, this past year, so the, you know, anniversary for me, is November, 25th. And, Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday, because it's surrounded by food and most people know that I love food,
mm-hmm.
Love food. I think it's the 25th. Like I've gotten so, the date, it's a very amazing thing. Because people's like, oh my God, how is the date not etched in your mind? It used to be for a very long time. And that's when I recognized with each passing year how much less power mm-hmm. it has over me. Because there are certain fragments about it that are no longer key items. You know, I'm no longer like on this moment at this time at this here. But I used to have the date, the time, the street address, those parts were etched in me. But in order to heal, you know that you're healed about something when you can remember the instance, but you don't feel the pain. You know, and so those, I was surprised that those things would happen. You know, at one point in my life, I thought I would always know. Now the physical part of my body is very interesting. When there are very, very cold moments and rain and things of that nature that mimic those instances for me, my physical body can get triggered.
Mm.
But typically my spiritual mind kicks in and I'll automatically know, oh, okay. So how do we process through that? How do we deal with that? And I don't have to acknowledge it with my group of friends, you know, anymore. It's something that is acknowledged within myself that I say, okay, so this is a day that you just might want to take it easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a day that you may not want to make major decisions. Mm-hmm. This is a day that, you know, you may want to work out twice today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might not want to eat all the sugary snacks and sweets because you have to be conscious of where you are, you know, at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm not so dumb deep and, you know, religious and all that stuff that I don't still have a taser and pepper spray and all this stuff, because again, we live in a fallen world with fallen people,
mm-hmm.
but I choose not to allow those things to fear and control me like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
So
you spoke to this a little bit already, but like the caring for yourself long term. So mm-hmm. like what are tangible things that men and women that have been assaulted can do to like care for themselves?
I think that you have to, when assault and any type of violation, really any type of violation, whether, you know, assault or even when you get down to broken relationships and things like that, you have to dig deep and get to know yourself on a deeper level. Because ultimately you're the only one that's going to be able to control you and your emotions, because if not, they'll control you.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find a way, because it's almost like human nature. You'll find a way to be angry, you know, you'll find a way to be like, oh my God, I hate the world, you know, or how could this happen to me? And not saying that those aren't very natural feelings. It's just if you want to be a productive contributing member of society and not be defined or labeled or insane, you have to find other outlets and other means. So I will say that it's always important to stay on top of you. When I first was assaulted, there was a period in my life where I went through, like I said, I had like 3 therapists. You know, I was on anxiety medication. You know, I was on a mood enhancer. Like, there were physical things that I had to do to get myself back to a place. Like, I had to be able to control my anxiety. Now, I've been off medication now. You know, this happened 8 years ago, I guess. Is that, man, 9 years ago now. It's 2020, so almost 9 years ago. I've been off of medication now for the last 5. You know, there are moments now where my anxiety creeps up and I have to make a decision. You know, it's been a long time for me. I realize that even where I am in this space, because you'll have different triggers, transitions, and, you know, life changes and things like that, where you have to check in. You know, I check in with my therapist. I no longer have to have regular sessions, but I check in with my therapist. You know, I check in with my providers. You know, I say, hey, you know, I noticed I'm feeling this, you know, or I noticed I'm, you know, gaining weight here, or I'm doing this, and I'm, you know, I'm eating more sweets, I'm craving more of this, you know. I check in to make sure that those things are long term, I'm okay. Something else that I do is to make sure that I am well. I don't disregard my minimal feelings, you know? So I'm very conscious and aware of, like, oh, when I'm flustered, I'm a huge communicator. You know, I say, oh, you know, I probably need to talk about that, because I don't like to give anything room. I don't like to allow anything to fester. So I think that that's important. I think that those are really like the biggest things, is making sure that you check in with yourself, you know yourself, and then you continue to have those resources for yourself. I like to say that, you know, it goes away and you heal, you're done. But there are times and there are moments where you'll say, I'm not okay. You know, I had a moment, I honestly, transparency, you know, 2 weeks ago, where I told my husband, I said, I don't know what happened. I don't know when the change happened. I don't know where it came from. I don't know what situation, but I've got to take a week into myself. Now, I don't know, you know, I'm like, okay, let me look at my calendar. Let me break it in. Let me try to schedule it. I reckon, okay, I can't drop everything. I can't stop this, but I can plan it. I can put it in motion. I can work towards those things. And, you know, I'm like, okay, February is the month. February is the month. I'm taking 3 days. I'm not going with my husband. I'm not taking my kids. I'm going to go check in a hotel. I'm going to go sleep. I'm going to eat what I want. Those things are vital, because you have to realize when things are creeping up on you, because when you've gone through trauma in general, your triggers are very, very real and you're very, very sensitive. And I mean, it's a whole science about it. Your mental serotonin levels have decreased. And that's a physical thing that there's not much you can do about it unless you want to be on medication long term. And I did not. So I recognize that, because I choose to, you know, eat right and work out and do all these things in the natural, there's still very natural things that have to be done, you know, because I realize that depression for me is easier. And it may be for a perfectly 20-year-old healthy person with no traumas. Depression for you can take, you know, 7 months to onset. It can take 6 weeks to onset, because there's a disadvantage there, you know? So I think that becoming very real with yourself and being very transparent with yourself, limiting, you know, your traumas, do not continue to traumatize yourself. And that comes in many forms: hanging with the wrong people, talking to the wrong people, not having enough support, hating your job, hating your your everyday life, eating trash. Like, those are things that you are at a disadvantage because of your traumas. And it's not anything that you did. It's life. It happens. And the faster we can realize this isn't me, this happened to me, I still have to deal with it. These are my cards. This is my deck. I have to deal with it. And that's it. That's all you can do. You know, I'm a big, big, big component of owning who you are and where you are. You know, you will never, and I won't say never, because that'll leave here and then tomorrow it'll happen. But very seldom will you ever hear me say, well, if they, I'm in control of me. And if you can get to me somewhere, that means that I did not attend to me somewhere. Now, it may take some work to figure out where you dropped the ball. But somewhere, somehow along the way, something happened and you didn't tend to yourself. And now you've got to start the journey all over again. You know, so I think being with self is important.
As a therapist, yes. Like, yes. Even just the thing about minimal, like your minimal feelings and paying attention to them, but kind of how we set ourselves up in ignoring that, but also staying places that we hate, not eating well, not getting enough sleep, not taking time for us, not doing things that fill us up. That's all, it's like a predisposition in a way, even though it's not like a physical one. It's like you're setting yourself up.
Your mental health, and especially in the world that we live in with the changes that we have and the accesses that we have, it's not like it used to be, you know, in the 90s where there was certain discretion and there were certain standards and there were certain things, you know, but for me, I can go out at any given moment because of the world and the things that the world glorifies. I can be fully dressed to impress and still get a response from a male that I did not initiate or warrant. Because the world hypersexualizes everything.
Everything.
So if my dress is too tight, I can have on a turtleneck, black spandex down to my kneecaps. But a creep is a creep. You know what I mean? And so someone saying, oh, hey, has a different reaction. But in the 90s, it was, oh, she might be a respectable young lady.
She's covered.
I'm not gonna say nothing. She's covered. But now it's almost like, because everything is so open, you actually get the opposite effect. Oh, you covered. You must be about that life. Wait a minute. I'm confused at what we're going for here. I put on clothes so you wouldn't talk to me. Are you saying that you're talking to me because I have on clothes? Because I'm not sure. But because the world is hypersexualized, you're catching it both ways.
Everywhere, anywhere, all the time, no matter what.
You know, no matter what. And so that's a different, it's a different thing. You have to recognize, like, oh, okay, I really can't avoid this. I really can't hide this, you know, and then we have privilege that comes into play. You know, we have a world that glorifies material things. And so, you know, now it's like assumed, oh, you know, I got a little pocket change. Hey, well, let me come over here and talk to you any kind of way. And you're like, wait, I'm not even at your table. Like, why did you pick me? So there's so many different things that we have to be conscious of. And I tell ladies, it's like, you just have to be smart. And men, you have to be smart. You cannot increase the chances of making yourself a victim.
That's good.
You know, so, and it's not her fault. We are not blaming you. I'm not blaming you,
right?
But I'm saying that you have to take accountability and understand the world that you live in. You know, you cannot say, I'm taking back my sexual power and I'm going to walk around in a two-piece and that's going to be it. Baby, this is not the time for that. You're going to have to figure out a way to take back your power in a different way, because that is beyond inviting now. Now you've made yourself an easier target. And it is unfortunate. And it isn't your fault, but it is where we live. You know, and people don't like to hear you say that, but they don't hear the other part of it. Again, no one's blaming you, shaming you, deciding or inviting. We're saying don't make yourself more likely to have a crime committed against you, because they are committing them anyway, whether you want them or not. So that means that, hey, I'll buy my own drink. If you want the free drink, no, get you $5 and buy your own stuff. You know, no, don't get in the car with these weirdos. you know, hey, let's not be wasted in the backseat of the Uber. You know, let some of this we have to take responsibility of for ourselves and understand that we're in a world that is taking. Mm. So you can't give it. Mm. You cannot do the things that you would used to be able to do, especially for the younger millennial generation that is coming up. It's different, you know. No, I probably can't go out to this club with no panties on. I probably just can't do that. Because I have to be conscious that, oh, okay, I'm having a good time. And to somebody else, that's a inviting gesture. Mm. Should you be able to walk out of house with no drawers on? Sure. But maybe you should walk outside with no drawers on to the mailbox. Not to the club where everybody's intoxicated and we've increased, you know, these types of things. And so
I think that's a really interesting, because there's a lot, I feel like in life and the times we live in, people are erasing a lot of lines and just like, I should be able to, so I'm going to.
I'm going to. And it's very, very false.
And you highlighted that with like, hey, they're taking. Mm-hmm. Don't increase the opportunity. Don't entice, because yeah, you should be able to, but you've got to be aware of where you are, where you live. Mm-hmm. And not, again, not that it's your fault, not that you set it up. You just have to know, like, there's a predator out there. Are predators.
Mm-hmm. This period. Is where we are. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but, it's where we are. And, it's like anytime we can have a bathroom that is for he and she, where he is a she at the top and he at the bottom, we have to be aware. This is where we live.
Yeah, that's
And it's just very, very real where we are. And it's at some point we have to take our own safety in our own hands and say, okay, I want to do this, but I need to be creative and figure out a way to do this because this could be a problem.
Mm-hmm. A safe way, a way that doesn't expose me to unnecessary risk. Right. When I'm just out here and it's risky anyway, just being out here regularly.
Right. Right.
That's wisdom. That's good balance. That's good balance.
Yeah.
Thank you. You've dropped all the gems, all the things, but we knew this. We knew this was what you would do. I knew this. So how can people, well, before that, anything that you want to say to any parties, like, what does the church need to be doing? What do men need to be doing? Parents, communities, like any words for them?
I think that, and I'll make them quick because, you know, we could talk a whole another hour. Mm-hmm. I think for parents, I think that we have to not make these things taboo anymore. I think that we have to very much so distinguish what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And I think that we have to instill confidence and love into our girls and our boys so that they understand boundaries, because we're living in a boundaryless world. I think for churches and people, I think we have to stop being stereotypical. We have to get outside of the norm and the religion and recognize that there are people that are struggling and are going through things, and we have to be very practical and accountable to that. And I think for just men and women, I think that we have to get to a place where we understand who we are, what we are, what we want, to avoid some of the traumas that ensue in our lives. You know, like I say, we have to make sure that we're not aiding to the traumas that we've already lived through, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But as for me, you know, I'm definitely going to keep doing my thing. I tell everybody you can find me on social media, Dr. Kyla Nicole Lurie. Kyla Nicole, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Dr. Kyla Nicole, my website, drkylanicole.com. So I'm not hard to find. I'm here to support everyone in their questions and their journeys and their healing. And I'm excited for them. I just, you know, encourage people to remember that you are not your circumstance. You know, you are not your situation, and you don't have to be what society says you are.
A word. Yes. And you segued that so nicely. I was like, I need to ask her about her handle so people can find her, but you handled that all the way. Praise. Yeah, man. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Such a treat. Okay. You all, Yes, connect with Kyla, Dr. Nicole, Dr. Kyla Nicole Lurie. Connect with her in all the ways and places. If you have experienced trauma, I definitely want to link resources in the show notes for you. Not if you've experienced trauma, but specifically sexual assault. Would love to link resources for you in the show notes, especially Dr. Lurie's trauma coaching. I know she's very selective, but if she can't coach you, I'm sure she can point you in the right direction, point you to the right resources. But as always, guys, make it a great week. I love you. Definitely follow, connect, stay tuned in, stay plugged in. I'm so excited for all the things that are happening. So love you. Boss out your week. Make it great. Bye.